This podcast of the Weekend Stakes Preview is brought to you by Barbados Tourism. The Weekend Stakes Preview starts in just 15 seconds after this word from our podcast sponsor.
If you've been waiting to discover that spot where peace of mind meets the time of your life, then it sounds like you've been waiting on Barbados. From the majesty of horse racing and polo to the thrill of surfing our playful waves, visit jetblue.com/Barbados for special vacation packages.
Welcome to the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Whitmore angles to the center of the track from third. 3-5 India fourth, uncontested fifth. Limousine Liberal and Richard the Great trying to swing toward the outside. And now here comes Limousine Liberal outside of uncontested, coming after Awesome Banner. 3-5 India, Whitmore and Limousine Liberal and uncontested. Loose on the town needs room. A driving finish. Whitmore, Awesome Banner, 3-5 India, Limousine Liberal coming to the line in the Phoenix. It will be close at the line, head bobbing photo for the win, either Whitmore or Awesome Banner for the top spot in 109-4.
Now here's Bobby Newman and Bob Nastanovich.
Good evening. Welcome to another edition of the Weekend Stakes Preview here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Bobby Newman along with Bob Nastanovich. We've got 13 races from around the country to look at this evening. None of them are major three-year-old preps on the road toward this year's Triple Crown. A little bit of a lull or a breather week, if you will, as far as the three-year-olds go. We've had tons of races the last few weeks for these three-year-olds looking at the first Saturday in May, and we've got, I think, five big Derby preps next weekend from around the world, including races in Japan, races in Dubai, races here in the States like the Louisiana Derby, the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and the Sunland Park Derby. But we focus on the older horses this weekend. We've got great racing from around the country, Bob.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Really looking forward to the Whitmore, actually. And it's always nice to – I think the Whitmore Stakes, it was called the Hot Springs, I believe, and he won it four times. So that's the first race we're going to talk about, tribute to that fantastic sprinter. But, yeah, no, we'll definitely be spending a lot of time and the Mid-Atlantic region, there's a bunch of stakes races, a few state bred races, and a couple of nice three-year-old races from Laurel, and some pretty decent turf races out at Santa Anita as well.
All right, well, let's start at Oaklawn Park, where they've got two graded stakes on their Saturday card, the first of which is that aforementioned Grade 3 Whitmore Stakes, a race that was named in honor of the champion from 2020. Of course, Whitmore, as you mentioned, won the Hot Spring Stakes 4 years in a row here at Oaklawn Park, so they renamed the Hot Spring Stakes in honor of the great champion, and we've got a nice field set to go 6 furlongs in the Whitmore tomorrow. Field of 10 going to post. Several different ways you can go in this spot, Bob. The morning line favorite is number 2, Tejano Twist, who's won 3 of his last 4.
Yeah, no, he's a very interesting horse. There's a ton of speed in here. There's excellent speed from Empire of Gold and Pirate Rick. Probably the speed of the speed might be Edge to Edge, who's just in career best form for Chris Hartman, including kind of easily defeating CZ Rocket, who finished second behind him in an open allowance race on February 17th. So he's the now horse, but he is stepping up for the first time in a long time from allowance company into a Grade 3 stakes race. So you'd have to think that that's a bit of a class hike. I expect, you know, as you'd expect in any Grade 3 sprint, 6 furlongs at Oaklawn Park, a very competitive pace on the front end, and it might set the table for a couple of horses. And one horse looks to be tremendous value in here, and that's the 3 Miles Ahead. A 6-year-old son of Competitive Edge, trained by Paul McGee for JMS Stable. He's got quite a resume himself. He's 12 for 27 lifetime. He's 8 for 14 going 6 furlongs. He's 15-1 in the morning line, and he ran kind of a sneaky good race on January 28th here in the race of the first part of the series, the King Cotton. He really sort of finished strongly from the back, hinted at better things to come. It's his the third race of his form cycle, third race since Christmas. He's working very well at the fairgrounds. Makes the return trip to Hot Springs, and I expect him making a big rally down the middle of the track under Martin Garcia.
All right, so you like Miles Ahead coming out of the King Cotton. I think Tejano Twist, who was just ahead of him coming out of the King Cotton, is very likely the one to beat. I think both of them have interesting shots in this race. You get a much better price with your selection than mine, but Tejano Twist, Should get plenty of pace to run at. He was second best to Gunite in that aforementioned King Cotton. I think if Gunite were in this race tomorrow, he would be about an even money favorite in the race. So the King Cotton comes back strong. We're going to go with the second and third place finishers from that race. Tejano Twist for me, price play with miles ahead for Bob in tomorrow's Grade 3 Whitmore Race 8 on the Oaklawn Park card. The ninth race tomorrow at Oaklawn is the $500,000 Grade 3 Essex Stakes. Distance here is a mile and a 16th. Another nice field of 10 coming together in this race. And Bob, there are several ways you can go. The horse who's favored on the morning line is drawn outside, Last Samurai, for the team of Wayne Lucas and Christian Torres.
Yeah, now you've got some likely suspects, some standing dishes in here like Silver Prospector, Necker Island, Forza D'Oro's in here. Of course, we can't leave out Rated R Superstar, who's now 10, and he won this race in both 2019 and last year. So even at the ripe old age of 10, you never know when he's going to pop up and run his A-game race. And if he does, he definitely would be good enough to make it into the top three here. I don't think he can win. I'm actually looking at a horse that's had far fewer starts, a horse called Tawny Port. Tawny Port won the Grade 3 Ohio Derby last year at Thistledown. Then he ran a huge third in the Jim Dandy behind Epicenter and Zandon. Epicenter, of course, went on to be three-year-old champion. He hasn't really, since then, he ran a very subpar race in the Pennsylvania Derby. It might have been a bridge too far for him. And then he had kind of an even test at 7-2 in the Grade 3 Mineshaft at Fairgrounds the other day. I think Brad Cox will have him ready. Rafael Bejarano is having an outstanding meet, picks up the mount on this very well-bred son of Pioneer of the Nile out of Livy McKenzie. And I think that he'll be rolling late, and that another 15-1 shot looks to have a pretty live chance to hit the board, if not win the race.
All right, so you're going to pick a 15-1 shot in the Essex. I'm going to pick a 15-1 shot in the Essex as well, drawn right outside of that one. Number 9, Keystone Field for Mike Maker and Isaac Castillo. This is a horse who ran in the Grade 3 Razorback last time out and was actually 7-1 in the race, and looked like he was in good shape early and just completely threw out the anchor around the far turn and down the stretch and finished 7th in the field of 8 and beaten 20 lengths. It was clearly the worst race that he has run in a long, long time. But if you look at his past performances, he's followed up bad races with good ones before. Now, albeit those bad races were going from turf to dirt, but he's run well on turf, and he just threw in a bad race and then came back next time out with a monster effort, getting back to the main track. I think his last race is a non-effort. If he was beaten 5 lengths, 8 lengths, 9 lengths, something like that, that's different. When you're beaten 20 lengths, either he wasn't interested that day or something didn't go well for him that day. I think it's a non-effort. If you can draw a line through Keystone Field's last race, his previous starts, speed figure-wise, put him right there with this field. He's been running mainly in allowance races. That's probably why he's 15-1. He hasn't been running as much against stakes competition as some of these other big names in the field. But he's got a chance, and his last race is not indicative of what he really is. So both Bob and I think we can get money, get some prices in the Grade 3 Essex. Bob goes with Tawny Port. I'm going with the 9 Keystone Field, a couple of 15-1 shots on the morning line. Let's switch gears over to New York. Their Saturday feature is the $100,000 Cicada for 3-year-old fillies sprinting 6 furlongs on the main track. Just a short but sweet field of 6 going to post. And Bob, I would guess we're going to see one of our shortest prices of any of these stakes that we're going to talk about. Number 3, Downtown Mischief, has done nothing wrong in her 2 career starts, and she's even money on the morning line.
You know, and she probably deserves to be, but, you know, that was a state-bred maiden for New York breds and then an allowance optional claimer. She's definitely moving up in class here, open stakes company in the Cicada. She likes to lay a little bit off, and of course she has the speed to seize control of the race early. It looks like there's tons of speed to her inside from a very fast Indiana bred who shows up here, a horse called Hot Little Thing, who raced last out at Indiana Grand and went 2 turns, didn't like that, but when she was sprinting before that, she looked extremely fast. Very interesting to see that Rudy Brissett has shipped this horse in from Keeneland to take try to this $100,000 stakes at Aqueduct. I'm going to take a chance here with Tappan Josie. Tappan Josie breaks from the rail, was claimed two back for $62,500, and then ran at Parks in the $75,000 Society Hill, stalked the pace and really finished nicely, going 6.5. And I think she's in excellent form here. I think she'll be ignored. I think 6-1 in the morning line's about right. I think she might be a little bit of a longer price because all the money that Downtown Mischief and Hot Little Thing will take. So I'm going to take another price play here, Tappan Josie, to run a big race in the Cicada.
All right, so 6-1 on the morning line, trying to get her fourth win in a row. That's Bob's top selection, Tappan Josie in the Cicada. I could not come up with somebody that I thought would beat number 3, Downtown Mischief. I realized that she's a New York bred facing open company for the first time in her career, but listen, just speed figure-wise, she's just towers over this field, and I think either she's going to have to run poorly or somebody's going to have to run something, some sort of race that we haven't seen from them yet, to have a chance at beating Downtown Mischief. I think she's going to be 3-5. Not that I'm going to bet 5 to win 3, but I'm going to pick her on tops. For me, Downtown Mischief gets the job done in the Cicada Race 9 tomorrow at Aqueduct. All right, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to head down south to South Florida. They've got two stakes on their Saturday card at Gulfstream Park. We're going to start to look at the Laurel card tomorrow. 5 stakes at Laurel Park tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
There's plenty of thrills at Gulfstream Park during the championship meet with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. Don't miss the Triple Crown prep races, including the Fountain of Youth Stakes on March 4th and the Florida Derby Saturday, April 1st. Enjoy the races outdoors from the Carousel Club, our Feast in 10 Palms, offering a premium view of the races. For stake schedules, reservations, tickets, and more, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
Sam Houston Race Park's live thoroughbred meet runs through April 8th and features a new afternoon racing schedule for 2023 with racing Friday through Sunday and a first post at 1 p.m. Central. We're looking forward to March 25th, Texas Champions Day. Make it to Sam Houston Race Park as the best in Texas. Compete in 7 exciting stakes races. The 9 race card starts at 1 p.m. at Houston's Best Bet. Canadian racing fans are invited to play Sam Houston at simulcast outlets throughout Canada and on HPI Bet. For more information, visit shrp.com.
Would you know what to do in a poison emergency? Would you know whom to call? Well, the answer is Poison Help. 1-800-222-1222. Poison Help is a 24/7 government hotline staffed by poison experts. It's free to call and available in over 100 languages. Every second counts in a poison emergency. Don't waste it wondering who to call. Save Poison Help in your phone today. 1-800-222-1222.
Want to get the latest HRRN content directly on your computer or mobile device? Then subscribe to our podcast using the Podbean app or Apple Podcasts. Just go to hrrn.podbean.com on your computer and click follow, or download the Podbean app and search HRRN. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts and listen to our latest episodes anytime. Don't miss a thing. Subscribe to our podcasts today.
This is the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
People will have to fight on the outside. They move to the eighth pole, and Patton will take the lead. Holy Bull coming right back on the outside. They're in mid-stretch. On the outside, Holy Bull is game, and Mike Smith moves alongside. They come down to the wire, and Holy Bull pressed this afternoon, but will take it by a half a length. Patton in second, and you and I third.
Ah, the late great Ross Morton on the call of the 1994 edition of the Hutchison Stakes down at Gulfstream Park. Holy Bull coming away with the win in that year's Hutchison, and the Hutchison one of two stakes on tomorrow's card at Gulfstream as well. Welcome back to the Weekend Stakes Preview here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bobby Newman, Bob Nastanovich. Before we head to those races at Gulfstream, it's time now for the Blood Horse News Update and a look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. Keeneland Breeders' Cup has $81.8 million economic impact. The 2022 Breeders' Cup World Championships at Keeneland generated a total estimated economic impact more than $81.8 million in Lexington and the surrounding areas, according to results released March 17th from a study by the University of Louisville. A study done by economics professor Dr. Thomas Lambert showed 2022 World Championships produced the second highest economic impact recorded in Breeders' Cup history following the record set in 2017 at Del Mar. The 2022 event's economic punch was 27.8% higher than the 2015 Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, which had an economic impact an estimated $65 million. That wraps up this afternoon's edition of the Blood Horse News Update. Follow the road to the Kentucky Derby, plus have the latest racing, breeding, sales, and industry news, as well as analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. Both are free. Blood Horse Daily has the largest reach of any industry electronic newsletter or app. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up now. Bob, when you hear numbers like that, first of all, it boggles the mind, and you realize why all of these tracks desperately want to host the Breeders' Cup, and why tracks like Keeneland or Del Mar that on the face seem like they're a little bit too small venue-wise to host those big crowds have kind of made adjustments, putting in temporary seating, whether it's bench seating or turn seating on the turns, to be able to fit these people. And you know, the Breeders' Cup is a big deal and brings a lot of money in.
I think we both attended Breeders' Cups at both Del Mar and Keeneland, and it's pretty remarkable how they not only squeeze everybody in, but you can get your bets in. I haven't had really that many problems with concessions. Things run pretty smoothly. So tip of the cap to both of those tracks. And, of course, fantastic racing communities for both. I think when Breeders' Cup fans go to Keeneland and Lexington, they're just sort of thrilled to be there. It's just a proper legendary at this point horse racing venue. And good for them and good for Lexington with a financial boon.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, where I think a lot of us thought that we'd never see a Breeders' Cup at Keeneland or Del Mar. The Breeders' Cup would be at the tracks with the giant grandstands like Churchill Downs, like Santa Anita, like Belmont Park has had in the past. But Keeneland and Del Mar and some other tracks have made adjustments, and they have certainly benefited greatly by doing so and bringing these championships in, not on a regular basis, but on a semi-regular basis now over the last 8-10 years or so. All right, let's get back to the stakes action, Bob. Two stakes tomorrow at Gulfstream Park, the first of which is the Hutchison, a race with a deep history. These are three-year-olds going for a purse of $100,000, 6 furlongs on the main track at Gulfstream. Field of 7 going to post, and we have another one who's even money on the morning line. This time it's the George Delgado trainee, Super Chow.
Well, we both remember the glory days of the Hutchison when it used to kick off the Florida Derby series. Back then it was a 7-furlong race. It was a grade 2, as we heard coming in from this break. Holy Bull won it 94. I fondly remember the 2000 renewal in which the very good racehorse, now legendary stallion, More Than Ready, dead-heated with a gray horse called Summer Note that Randy Morse trained. It was a pretty amazing race, and it was very similar to like Lure and Devil Is Due. They basically hooked each other for 7 furlongs, and they couldn't separate them at the wire. And then I kind of got to know Summer Note a few months later as best you could, because he was such one of those horses that's so mean that there was cones in front of his stall. So he actually didn't last in training very often because he was very difficult to work with. But he was wonderful that day against More Than Ready. And I mean, the Hutchison's still around, but at this point it's a listed 6-furlong race. I don't really think that this is the most competitive field. I was trying to make a case to beat the favorite, the 3 Super Chow, trained by Jorge Delgado and ridden by Chantal Sutherland, his regular rider. And then, you know, you look, he beat 2 of a Kind. He's one of your best chances to upset him in here by 11 last time in the Swale, and that's when he finished 2nd by a length of General Jim. And he was going 7 furlongs that day. That seems to be too far for him. He's very sharp. He knows he breaks very sharply from the gate. He's got good controlling speed. Just looks like an easy horse to ride. And I think this is pretty much a steering job for Super Chow. I can't oppose him.
Okay, I'm going to actually try to beat the favorite with number 6, You Better Be Joking, for George Weaver and Luis Saez. This one won on debut early part of November at Aqueduct. Got the job done by over 3 lengths that day. Horse who was 3rd in the race came out of that race and got his maiden win in his next start. You Better Be Joking coming off a little bit of a rest now for George Weaver, who does just fine with these extended layoff-type runners. And if he improves... First of all, like most 2-year-olds do to their 3-year-old year, and a lot of horses do from their debut effort to their second start, I don't think he's that far behind Super Chow. Super Chow is going to be very, very tough to beat. He's a horse that really wants the lead, and there's other speed in here. You Better Be Joking is one who I think could close if anyone presses Super Chow on the front end, which is certainly a big if. So Super Chow for Bob. I'm going to take a little bit of a shot with number 6, You Better Be Joking, 8-1 on the morning line, race 8 at Gulfstream tomorrow, the $100,000 Hutchison. Jump forward to a race 11 at Gulfstream tomorrow. It's the $100,000 Silks Run. 4-year-olds and up, going to sprint 5 furlongs on the turf, and a field of 12 going to post. Bob, I have said it for years on this network. Turf sprints are not my forte. For some reason, I'm waiting for fastball, and they're throwing curveballs at me. That's what it seems like more often than not when I get to turf sprints. So I don't spend a whole lot of time on these races normally because I usually just want to pass them and move to something where I think I have a better chance. That being said, we're going to come up with something here in the Silks Run. This does not look like the easiest race to handicap, though. There are several ways you can go.
Yeah, I think, you know, pretty logically, a 5-furlong turf sprint around a turn, there's going to be a lot of hard luck stories involved. They're obviously going full tilt. You see a lot of 21-43, 21-44. You see 4 or 5 incredibly fast horses. And then if the race collapses at the furlong pole, it's just a matter of who gets the seam at the right place. So it's probably not you, Bob. There's probably just a lot of – you're probably handicapping these races very well. It's just there's a lot of luck involved. I see this as on paper as a 3-horse race. You've got Caro Tarai, who Irad Ortiz will ride at least for the first time in the last 10 tries. I don't think he's ever ridden him for Brian Lynch. He's a 7-year-old. He's in great form. He got beat half a length by one of his chief rivals in here, Yes, I Am Free, who loves the turf course here. So both of these horses, Yes, I Am Free, possessing a better early speed, look to be very tough in here. But I can't get past the fact that we've got Big Invasion for Christophe Clement making his first start of the year. He's 5-2 in the morning line. He'll be ridden by his usual rider, Joel Rosario. He's a 4-year-old by declaration of war. He's run 8 times. He finished 2nd in his first start, an even effort, going 5 furlongs on the turf here. And then he raced to Kentucky Downs last time and got slammed into it at the start and still finished 3rd. The other 6 races, he's won easily. I think he's a rising star in this turf sprint division. I think he's going to kick off his 2023 campaign with a big effort. I like the 9 Big Invasion.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get past him. I think the only way you get past Big Invasion is if you think that he's not fully cranked for this race. He's a horse who's already a graded stakes runner. And I think there were some people out there, myself included, who thought that he would be the one to be the main danger in the Breeders' Cup sprint last year, a Breeders' Cup turf sprint. Unfortunately, he didn't run very well at Kentucky Downs, and he was on the shelf for many months after that race. There's no doubt in my mind, you're right. If he runs his race, they're all running for second. I'm going to take a small chance that maybe he's not 100% cranked for the Silks Run. It's just a $100,000 stake at Gulfstream. It's not usually where trainer Christophe Clement, you know, focuses his attention. I think he's probably got bigger and better things down the line, maybe in Kentucky and New York, that they're looking at for Big Invasion. Maybe this is the time Caratari can beat Big Invasion. I don't know if he can. I know Big Invasion's better than Caratari, but maybe tomorrow will be Caratari's day, and he's very, very consistent. He can run well on the front end or stalking the pace, and as you mentioned, Irad Ortiz picks up the mount for Brian Lynch. So Caratari for me, Bob going with number 9, Big Invasion in the Silks Run, race 11, tomorrow at Gulfstream Park. Let's jump down to Laurel. They've got 5 stakes on their Saturday card, and the first of which is race number 5. It's the $75,000 Conover for the fillies and mares, sprinting 7 furlongs on the main track. We've got 8 of them going to post here, and the favorite is number three, Response Time, at 8-5.
Yeah, the Conover is, you know, like you said, a 7-furlong race for Maryland breds. Again, these are horses that I don't know extremely well. The one horse in here, Ward Wanted, appears kind of logical. He turns back from two route races at Laurel into a 7-furlong sprint. Although I think they run their 1-mile races around one turn, and he ran extremely well two back in the Geisha there. Ran very well behind her Eclipse and the Nellie Morse last time. Definitely informed. 2-1 in the morning line. Looks like a pretty solid fit. I'm going to take a shot here at a price. It looks like there's a fair amount of speed in here. And I like the 5-horse Mavilis, kind of a very deep closer. Needs a fast pace, but it looks like there's plenty of speed in here. And I think the Carlos Mancilla trainee, ridden by Jaime Rodriguez, has a big shot, the 5-horse Mavilis.
All right, so you're going with Mavilis in this spot. I'm going to go to the favorite Response Time, simply because she never runs a bad race. I realize that she's facing stakes competition. I think for, if not the first time in her career, the first time in a long, long time. But as you mentioned, it's just a $75,000 stake for state bred or straight Maryland sired fillies and mares. So it's not like Response Time is jumping from allowance races into a graded stake against open company. This is a logical step up for her. And simply put, most of the races that she's been running look like they would beat this field. I think 8-5 would be a fair price. I don't know if you'll get that price, but Response Time for me, Mavilis for Bob in tomorrow's Conover Stakes race 5 on the Laurel Park card. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got 4 more Laurel Stakes to look at. This is the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Attention horse racing fans, don't miss your chance to witness the excitement and adrenaline of live horse racing. Come out to Laurel Park and experience the thrill of victory Friday through Sunday. Don't miss out on 5 thrilling stakes races with a total of $450,000 in purses on Saturday, March 18th that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Mark your calendars and join us at Laurel Park for an unforgettable day at the races. Gates open at 11 a.m. See you at the track.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst and cancer champion Dick Vitale.
I want to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. Join our team to help fund game-changing research that saves lives. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over the odds. V is for victory over health disparities, victory over setbacks, victory over the unknown. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Donate to the V Foundation to join our team and help save lives.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul.
100% of donations fund game-changing cancer research. Donate now to the V Foundation at V.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Top of the stretch with a quarter of a mile left to go. Feeling Woozy is the leader. Leaves it 2.5 for 3 lengths. Now Coffee with Chris. Prince of Jericho way out the center of the track. Trying to rally now. Coffee with Chris has come to the front. For a long and a half left to go. Prince of Jericho reaching under a drive on the outside. Here the outside is Prince of Jericho. Coffee with Chris is digging down. Coffee with Chris just in front. Coffee with Chris running into the second wire. Holding off Prince of Jericho. Feeling Woozy is third. Coffee with Chris. Coffee with Chris of the Miracle One. Prince of Jericho is second, and Feeling Woozy finished third.
The good doctor, Dr. Dave. Dave Rodman on the call of the 2023 edition of the Miracle Wood. Coffee with Chris coming away with the win that afternoon. He will try to get the win once again tomorrow at Laurel in the private terms, one of 5 stakes on their card tomorrow afternoon. Welcome back to the Weekend Stakes Preview here on HRRN. Bobby Newman with Bob Nastanovich. Let's get back to that Laurel Park card. Bob, race six tomorrow at Laurel is the $75,000 Not for Love. The Maryland bred or sired four-year-olds and up, sprinting six furlongs on their main track. We've got a field of 10 going to post, and we've got another 8-5 shot on the morning line in Eastern Bay.
Yeah, 8-5, and deservedly so. Eastern Bay is 19 for 54 lifetime, 12 for 29 at 7 furlongs. He's won 13 times at Laurel. This is the definitive specialist. He's a 9-year-old, and if anything, he seems better at 9 than he did at 7 and 8, judging by his form. In fact, he's so good that he beat Open Company in the General George here February 18th. And then ran right back, and trainer Norman Cash is keeping him really busy, sent him to Aqueduct for the Grade 3 Tom Fool, and he ran a very respectable race, beating two lengths into fourth. This is definitely his ballpark and his race to win. It's almost like the race exists for him. Wonderful horse, Eastern Bay, and I just can't imagine him getting beat in this spot.
All right, so we're taking a little bit of a different look on this race. Eastern Bay, certainly coming out of the best two races and probably the one to beat if he runs his best races. I'm not 100% sure we're going to see that race tomorrow. I think his last race, where he finished only two being lengths behind Lil Vic in the Grade 3 Tom Fool, was a big effort. I don't know if we're going to get that big effort again off what is just 2 weeks off since that race. So I'm going to go with a little bit of a price in number 10, Breezy Gust, for Josue Arce. He's the trainer, you former jockey Josue Arce, by the way. Dexter Haddock aboard Breezy Gust, who has been doing his damage down at Parks of late, finishing first or second in each of his last three starts, albeit against softer competition than what he's going to see tomorrow. But I think speed figure-wise, he's right there with these. I like the outside post, and he looks like a horse who's in good form right now. He's been first or second 15 of his 29 career starts, and I don't think he's ever been better than he is right now. So maybe this is the time Breezy Gust can get the job done in the Not for Love. Race 7 tomorrow at Laurel is the Harrison E. Johnson Memorial, one of five stakes on the card. Bob, how'd you see this one?
Yeah, it's nice to see him jump into Open Company here. I mean, the Maryland breds are apparently there's some very talented ones, but this race has a nice wide-open look with a lot of very good older horses. I landed on a horse called Nimitz Class. He's also a short price here, trained by Bruce Kravitz, who's having good meet. Javian Toledo has been riding extremely well on the circuit for years. Just this horse seems to be going from strength to strength at the moment. He's 7 for 13 lifetime. Appears to like a route of ground more than a sprint, and this one-turn mile just seems kind of ideal, even though he's never tried it. He's in great form, and he's very difficult for me to oppose this very talented four-year-old son of Munnings, who looks like he might be going places.
All right, so Nimitz Class for Bob in this race. I thought it was a tough race. By the way, as I mentioned, the Harrison E. Johnson Memorial, it's a $100,000 purse, and it is a one-turn mile. 9-5, the morning line on Nimitz Class. I went just to the inside of that with Our Nation on Parade, who was second to Nimitz Class last time out. Nimitz Class was 9-5 that day. Our Nation on Parade was 5-2. And they ran 1-2, and Nimitz Class was clearly better that afternoon. I just happen to think that Our Nation on Parade has some races in his past performances, more good races in his past performances, I should say, than Nimitz Class does. Nimitz Class may be just better right now. He's won 7 of his 13 starts, and his last two have been very, very good. But overall, I trust Our Nation on Parade a little bit more, and he's going to be a little bit of a better price. So I'm going to try him in the Harrison E. Johnson Memorial. Moving ahead to race 8, the Beyond the Wire, $100,000 on the line for the 3-year-old fillies going the one-turn mile. Field of 7 going to post in this race, Bob, and the 2-1 choice on the line, number 3, Lady Lowry.
Yeah, and I have some interesting stories in this race. Pretty interesting group of 3-year-old fillies, some very well-bred ones. The 7 horse who's 3-1 in here in the morning line, Cairo Sugar, has won 2 in a row at Aqueduct. She's a very good New York bred. She's by Cairo Prince out of the fantastic Frank Stronach-owned horse Spun Sugar, who was a multiple grade one stakes winner. And kind of interesting when you see a horse that's this regally bred to sell for only $6,000. So she must have some sort of confirmation fault or something, but it hasn't stopped her becoming a very good racehorse. She's in fantastic form right now. She's got good speed. Another interesting entrant is the horse you mentioned, the three, Lady Lowry. I'm going to pick her. She's a three-year-old filly by Munnings. Kind of amazing to me that Munnings has gotten a $100,000 stud fee, but he deserves it. He's been a fantastic stallion. This is a Windstar homebred trained by Elliot Walden's son, William, a new trainer. He's, I believe, 31, 32 years old. She's made two starts at Turfway on the synth. Came from way back, really showed an impressive turn of foot in her first try, and then dusted a similar field going 6.5. You know, it's going to be difficult for her to tackle new surface, the main thing, and she's stretching out from 6.5 to a mile. But the way she runs, I think that everything will fall into place for her, and I think she might be just too talented for this bunch.
All right, and she's got Revolutionary on the dam side, which certainly entitles her to go a little bit further than the 6.5 furlongs where she's raced her last two. I went to the rail, number one, Pharaoh's Baby Guile, for Brittany Russell, and Jevy and Delito are heavy on Toledo. Four career starts, including one at this one-turn mile distance at Laurel, which was clearly the best race of her career. Two ways to look at it, as far as I'm concerned. She's just much better now than she was to start her career, or she ran so well last time out that she's got to regress a little bit and go backwards. If she's 8-5 in here, I'm probably not interested, and I'm going to take the glass half empty look. If she's 5-2 or more, I'm going to take the glass half full look and say that she's just a better filly now than she was when we saw her as a 2-year-old last year, which certainly could be the case. That last effort, though, where she dusted an allowance field by some 10 lengths, I think is probably good enough to beat this field as well, so I'm going to try her in the Beyond the Wire race 8 tomorrow at Laurel. Ninth and final stake on the Laurel card tomorrow is the $100,000 private terms. Three-year-olds here going the about mile and a 16th distance, which is two turns at Laurel. Field of 8 going to post. Bob, I don't think any of these remind us of private terms yet, but we've got some pretty good runners in this field, and it's a real interesting handicapping puzzle. Mainly because How Great Is Nate shows up in this race. How Great Is Nate actually was supposed to run in the Grade 3 Gotham 2 weeks ago, but stumbled so bad at the start and unseated jockey J.D. Acosta that it was basically a non-effort, and he's wheeled back in this race back at Laurel.
Yeah, no, he definitely looks like a live contender in here if he runs back to any of his better. He was 4-for-4 as a 2-year-old, so pretty exciting horse. And how frustrating must that be to ship a horse up to Aqueduct and basically have him immediately lose the jock? That must have been a frustrating day. We'll see if he can make amends here. I like this is the biggest 3-year-old race of the weekend. You mentioned it's a quiet week for the 3-year-olds. This is a race that, you know, basically starts off the series for local horses. You usually get one or two of them in the Preakness. We'll see if any of them are that outstanding. I think it's kind of interesting that Brittany Russell and her husband Sheldon add the blinkers to the three-horse Circling the Drain. Circling the Drain's a 3-year-old gelding by West Coast. He's never run a bad race, and he ran a really mighty race last time, winning at a very short price, going the course and distance here at Laurel Mile on the 16th. I think he can step up further. I guess they think that the blinkers might actually eke a little bit more improvement out of him. If it does work, he's got a good post going mile on 16th there, very short run into the turn. I like the 3 Circling the Drain.
Yeah, you and I are on the same horse here, and we're both hoping we can get 6-1. And I can say it from reading the past performances of previous weekend stakes previews, when I agree with you or I agree with Dave or you agree with Dave, the morning line, we never seem to get the price that we think we're going to get on this horse. So 6-1 on Circling the Drain, I'm guessing that means that he's going to be a little bit lower than that. But for every reason that you said, I like him as well in the private terms. Speaking of private terms, Bob, I alluded to the fact that none of these horses quite yet remind us of a private terms. Do you remember private terms from the late 80s?
Yeah, I remember private terms, you know, not like the back of my hand, but I certainly remember the name, and I definitely watched him race.
I believe he won the first 7 starts of his career, and he was one of the favorites for the 1988 Kentucky Derby. I think he won the Wood Memorial and the Gotham, and he may have won the Federico Tessio, which, of course, is a graded stakes race at Pimlico back then before the Kentucky Derby. And then he was really not a factor in the Derby, and he did win races later in his career, the biggest one being the Mascap, but mostly some kind of nondescript races around the Mid-Atlantic region. He was kind of an all-or-nothing horse. I think he retired with 12 wins from 17 starts, but he never second or third. And Charles Hadry had him, and I believe Kent DeSormo rode him part of the time.
He was definitely owned by Claiborne. He was definitely a force. And then of course he came back at 4, won the Mass Cap, which was a big race then, the Never Bent Bend in the Damascus. So he, even though he didn't have a good classic campaign, he basically put it back together at 4 and proved what a good horse he is. So it's nice that he's saluted with his stakes race, which is usually a very good competitive race every year.
Yeah, and it looks like another edition of that's very competitive tomorrow, race 9 on the Laurel Park card. All right, we're going to take our final timeout. When we come back, we've got a Saturday stake at Santa Anita, a couple Sunday stakes to look at. You're listening to the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Sam Houston Race Park's live thoroughbred meet runs through April 8th and features a new afternoon racing schedule for 2023 with racing Friday through Sunday and a first post at 1 p.m. Central. We're looking forward to March 25th, Texas Champions Day. Make it to Sam Houston Race Park as the best in Texas compete in 7 exciting stakes races. The 9 race card starts at 1 p.m. at Houston's Best Bet. Canadian racing fans are invited to play Sam Houston at simulcast outlets throughout Canada and on HPI Bet. For more information, visit shrp.com.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Hi, this is Kurt Becker. Join me each week on the Equine Forum as I take you on a stroll through racing history presented by Keeneland. This week, I look back at the racing career of Maxwell G. Listen live on the Equine Forum every Saturday morning on Sirius 216 or XM 204, or visit our website at horseracingradio.net to access the archives and enjoy past editions. It's a stroll through racing history with me, Kurt Becker, presented by Keeneland, only here on HRRN.
This is the Weekend Stakes Preview on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three quarters in one, 15 and one, and they enter the stretch, and it's Samrod, and he's opened up here. It's Samrod in front by 7 lengths, and he did it very quickly there. Samrod in front. Farther back, it's Forever Utopia. Then on the outside, it's Deceived. At the rail, Gomez. And how about we... But it's Samrod in a romp in the Damon Runyon, and he's now 3-for-3 in his young career.
Ah, the voice of John Imbriel back in 2013, Samrod, starting off his career in style and winning that year's Damon Runyon. Welcome back to the Weekend Stakes Preview here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Bobby Newman, along with our good friend Bob Nastanovich. 3 more races to talk about, Bob. One of them tomorrow at Santa Anita Park. It's the $100,000 China Doll for the 3-year-old fillies going a mile on the turf. We've got a field of 7 going to post. And the 8-5 morning line favorite is the Phyllis D'Amato trainee, Comanche Country.
Yeah, every year these 3-year-old fillies, turf fillies, both in the east and the west, really attract some sort of interesting private purchases, usually from Irish, sometimes from English and French connections, and this race has a few of those. We've got Paris Secret in here. kind of interesting. She made her lifetime debut on Halloween last year at Galway, where they race clockwise, so right-handed on very heavy ground going a mile and a 16th. So sort of like nothing like today's conditions. She was trained then by a lesser-known guy named Andrew Oliver. And basically, as far as I know, I can't see any record of any sale, privately sold to these owners, Strand Beach LLC, and makes her U.S. debut on Saturday for Phil D'Amato, and ridden by this Camuro, who's made a splash out there, former Woodbine rider in Southern California. But, 28-1 winner of her debut going right-handed. So that's interesting. Now we've got the two horse who's been here for a while, who raced both in England and France, was trained in Newmarket by Amy Murphy, who's an outstanding trainer, and she basically has not been herself since she got to California. Subpar effort on the Del Mar turf, not too good on the Golden Gate synthetic, and slow going down the hill, so she'll need a form reversal. And then you've got a horse that's been better since coming to the U.S., and that's the Wild Grazer, a three-year-old filly by Gustav Klimt out of a Clotaville mare. She was trained over there by Andrew Slattery in Italy, ran well at Gowran Park, and then was privately purchased and has really stepped up here. Another case, Mullins adds the blinkers with the Wild Grazer. It'll be interesting to see how she does, but none of them are my selection. My selection is the six-horse Princess Bettina, a Donald Disney homebred trained by Peter Yurton, who's in good form, has the stable in good form. And she just had a really ugly trip here in the first race in this series, the Lady Shamrock last time under Flavian Pratt. Just nowhere to go. Got beat three-quarters by the Wild Grazer. Makes the switch from Flavian Pratt to one of the best of all time. Of course, the fans at Santa Anita have been enjoying this meet. Frankie Dettori picks up the mount, and I think that her closing style will work very nicely in here. She's got decent tactical speed. She won't be too far off of it, but I think that Frankie will work out a good trip, and Princess Bettina is the horse to beat.
All right, Princess Bettina for Bob. Bob, I looked at this race up and down, and despite the fact that Comanche Country has won three races in Southern California on the turf, including the Grade 3 Surfer Girl, I don't think that this crop so far, from what I've seen, is phenomenal. I think that a newcomer can beat this field. I'm going to guess, it's a total guess, that number one, Paris Secret, is good enough to beat this field. If she's good enough to win on that heavy ground in Ireland last October against nine others, I think that probably means that she's good enough to compete in here. By the way, Phil D'Amato, Kaz Camuro don't team up that often, just twice in the last couple months, and both of them ended up in the winner's circle. So Kimura's ridden well for D'Amato. I like the inside post. I like the morning line of 5-1. I'm going to try Paris Secret in tomorrow's China Doll at Santa Anita. Couple of stakes on the Sunday cards to look at. We're going to first start in Aqueduct with their $100,000 Damon Runyon, race 8 on the Sunday card at Aqueduct. The New York bred three-year-old's going to go 6 furlongs on the main track. Field of 6 going to post here. Slight favorite on the morning line is the 5, Don't Lose Cruise.
Damon Runyon, named after the legendary, of course, sports writer and incredibly talented writer, has several notable gambling quotes. If you have a chance, look some of those up. I know one of them is, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win. So it's nice. This race has been named the Damon Runyon for as long as I've known. So it's a very good, it's kind of the usual suspects, these New York breds going 6 furlongs. And, as you'd expect, the betting will be pretty even and short field, unfortunately. But I'm going to bet on Andiamo Afarense, quite notably from a pedigree perspective. This horse, who's by Spatestown, is a half to Firenze Fire. Of course, won 14 races, nearly $3 million in his career. I think it's very notable that he turns back from route races against Open Company, where he didn't finish at all, laid close, and then just absolutely faded. So they've given up on that experience. He returns to sprint racing for trainer Kelly Breen. Trevor McCarthy rides him for the first time, picks up the mount from Frankie Pennington. I think tomorrow might be go day for Andiamo Afarense.
All right, Andiamo Afarense for Bob, 5-2 on the morning line. I'm going to go to the 3-1 third choice on the morning line in the Bob Claseris trainee, number 1, What's Up, Bro. He's won 2 of his last 3 starts, all at Aqueduct. nice allowance win last time out against state bred competition. And listen, he's run against some of these in the past. He hasn't fared too well against horses like Don't Lose Cruise, but when he's on, he's really, really good. He's run four races in his lifetime. Two of them would easily compete with these, if not possibly beat this field. Two of them may not hit the board against this field. So I'm not sure which What's Up Bro we're going to get tomorrow, but price-wise, I like him as the third choice at 3-1, and I think that his good races certainly put him right there with them. So we're both trying to beat the favorite Don't Lose Cruise. Bob goes with number 3, Andiamo a Firenze. I'm going with the 1, What's Up Bro. Over at Santa Anita, their Sunday feature is Down the Hill, about 6.5 furlongs the distance. This is the sensational star named after a really good runner from about, 25, 30 years ago out in Southern California. Calbreds going for a purse of $100,000. They are four-year-olds and up, going the about 6.5 furlong distance. Field of 5 going to post, Bob. We've got a heavy favorite on the morning line in number 3, the Chosen Vron.
Yeah, it's a shame, these days that, especially these cowbred races that we only get 5 in here. But, there are 5 horses that definitely fit in cowbred stakes competition. The 1 Jack Six-Pack here was ridden by Kyle Fry, who I believe just had a baby daughter the other day. So congratulations to him, and he's having a good meet. Former Northern California rider who's plied his trade in Southern California for the last few years. This horse is owned and bred by Nick Alexander, of course, of Grazen fame. Again, D'Amato seems to have at least one horse in all of these races. I think Jack Six-Pack, with his speed on the inside, be a pretty straightforward assignment for him. There's always speed in these races, and they go incredibly quickly down that hill. Kings River Knight is interesting for John Sadler, first time, picks him up, made the trainer switch from Andy Mathis. The horse I really like in here is just another horse that's just a win machine. Seems like there's several horses running this weekend that win a high percentage of the time, and we just have to salute the Chosen Vron, who's now will be going for his 6th straight win. He's got a really nice win on the downhill turf course, which is, of course, as unique a racing situation as you'll get in America, maybe outside of Kentucky Downs. It's great that the downhill racing's back. If you've never been to Santa Anita, it's quite a spectacle to see him go down the hill. But now he's in marvelous form, handles turf or dirt. Just a horse that Derek Cruel Jack has flying right now. And Hector Berrios, another new shooter out in Southern California, is also having a good meet at 19%. This is obviously one of his stalwart mounts, and I think it'll be very difficult to beat the Chosen Vron in here.
Well, I think you're right. It is going to be very difficult to beat him, but I am going to try to beat him simply for the fact that I think the Chosen Vron is a little bit better on dirt than he is on turf. His dirt numbers, I think, stand out over this field. His turf numbers, although not bad, I think are right there, but not better than some of the others in this field. And he's going to be a very low price, mainly off his dirt form. Number 5, Fast Buck, I wanted to pick on top because it looks to me like he's just going to get the lead and go. But I'm not really sure he wants to go about 6.5 furlongs. It looks like 5.5 is about his limit. He's getting tired at 5.5 furlongs in other races. Last time he tried 6 furlongs, he looked like he was on his way to a win and got tired in the late stages and finished 3rd. I'm going to go with a closer in number 4, Indian Peak, for Pete Miller and Juan Hernandez. He's a horse who's been routing his last 2 starts, but he's run very well sprinting thus far in his career. He's actually won down the hill, winning the California flag a couple of years ago on this downhill turf course at Santa Anita. And I think they're all going to be coming at Fast Buck in the final furlong. And I think Indian Peak may be the one who's closing the fastest. So I'm going to try him for a little bit of an upset in tomorrow's, or rather Sunday's, sensational star. All 13 races in the books. Time now for the HRRN Best Bets.
This is the HRRN Best Bet.
All right, Bob, where are you going to go?
I'm going to go with the Whitmore, the first race that we talked about. Again, I just think there's tons of speed in here. I think it's going to be interesting to see if Edge to Edge can continue to step up in class. Obviously, he's in torrid form for the Hartman barn. I think he gets hooked tomorrow. I think they're going to go really, really fast in here. I think it sets the table. And at the price, 15-1 just seems like a steal for a horse that's won similar races at places like Churchill and Gulfstream. I think the three-horse Miles Ahead, trained by Paul McGee, who ships in for the Fairgrounds, my best bet of the week.
All right, Miles Ahead for Bob in the Grade 3. Whitmore is his best bet. First race we talked about, I'm going to go to the last race we talked about in the Sensational Star Down the Hill Sunday at Santa Anita. I really like the closing kick of number 4, Indian Peak. Pete Miller's off to another great meet at Santa Anita since he's resumed his training career. And I think Indian Peak is going to be rolling by the leaders in the late stretch, and he's 4-1. On the morning line. All right, want to remind everybody, tomorrow another bang-up edition of the Equine Forum presented by Twin Spires. Our good friend Mike Penna, the Baron of the Backstretch, joined by Hall of Fame jockey Javier Castellano. He shares his thoughts on winning the prestigious George Wolfe Award. They're presenting it to him this weekend, actually, out at Santa Anita. Kentucky Senate Majority Leader Damon Thayer discusses the current sports betting bill and its impact on the racing industry. Jockey Guild Regional Rep Jeff Johnston talks about jockey mental health issues. Trainer Ron Moquette remembers the top sprinter Whitmore. Press Joe Christofek provides this week's Twin Spires Triple Play. Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history presented by Keeneland. There's Calling All Three-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift, as well as Unsung Heroes presented by Woodbine Entertainment. And, of course, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin debate the sport's hottest topics on I Ask, They Answer, presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program, all part of a very busy 3 hours tomorrow morning here on HRRN, the Equine Forum, presented by Twin Spires, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Sirius 216, XM 204, and online at horseracingradio.net. Bob, we've got just a few minutes left in the program. As we mentioned, this is a rare week where there are no points qualifiers on the road to this year's Kentucky Derby. Next week, we really jump back into the action with the major points qualifiers, places like the Louisiana Derby and the Jeff Ruby Stakes and the Sunland Derby and the UAE Derby. Of the three-year-olds you have seen thus far, if you could pick three right now that you want as far as ownership just for this year's Kentucky Derby, which three are they?
I'll tell you what, that's a tough question. I mean, obviously, Forte, I mean, he definitely looks like he's just an outstanding colt. Now, I'm not sure if he's going to be a Kentucky Derby type horse, but he could easily be one of these horses that sticks around for a few years and you know, might be better going shorter. His pedigree says that much. If we're talking about winning the Derby, I'm one of those racing fans that wasn't put off by Tappet Trice in the Tampa Bay Derby. Now, keep in mind, I don't think the Tampa Bay Derby has produced a Kentucky Derby winner since Street Sense. That being said, I think that people were a little bit hard on Tappet Trice last time. And I'll tell you what, going forward, I'm just a big fan, so I think I'd like to own Confidence Game. I think it's really cool that Keith DeSormo has another good horse. I think he's a very talented son of Candy Ride, who definitely opened some eyes last time out in the Rebel at Oaklawn Park. So no, that would be the three. But you know, this is one of those years that I'm a little behind where I usually am with the. So I'm going to be watching the prep races in the next few weeks very closely.
All right, interesting notes there. By the way, you mentioned Confidence Game. That's an interesting one to bring up because I think in the grand scheme of things, he is not getting the respect that maybe some of the others are getting, or maybe the respect that he deserves. Obviously, winning the Rebel is a major stepping stone on the way to the Arkansas Derby and hopefully for him the Kentucky Derby, and it doesn't seem like he's getting a ton of publicity right now, you know, with everyone kind of oohing and aahing about what Forte has done in his 2023 debut and what we saw with Tappet Trice overcoming adversity in the Tampa Bay Derby and what we saw with Practical Move winning the San Felipe out at Santa Anita a few weeks ago. So interesting note there, the Confidence Game is in your top three, and I'm guessing we're going to see him in the Arkansas Derby next. It makes complete sense. He obviously likes the track here at Oaklawn Park, and we'll see if he continues on his way. He's a horse that earned 50 points with that win in the Rebel, so he probably doesn't need any more points to get into the starting gate the first Saturday in May. But as I try to tell everyone and remind myself, you know, these races stand alone. These races, we call them preps for the Kentucky Derby. It's hard to call the Rebel a prep when it's a $1 million race. It's hard to call the Santa Anita Derby, the Florida Derby, the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass preps when they're grade one or grade two races. These are big deals on their own, and they mean a whole lot.
Absolutely. A lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of money. Listen, you know, the people, I know a lot of people invest a lot of money into this game. They want to win these graded stakes, and they want to win these purses. The Kentucky Derby is great. Only one person gets to win it each year. These other races mean a whole lot. All right, that's going to wrap it up tonight on the Weekend Stakes Preview. For our producers Kim Price and Lee Della Pina, my co-host Bob Nastanovich, I'm Bobby Newman. Thanks for joining us this evening, everyone. Have a great weekend at the races.